So, hello, I am on page 10, diffusion and facilitated diffusion. That is the topic, okay? So, let's start at the top left corner. It's called diffusion, and the first thing that you have to understand is that diffusion occurs in liquids and in gases, okay? So, the particles, air particles or whatever, liquid particles, they're moving because they have a temperature, so they're shaking, they're vibrating, okay? So these are the atoms and the molecules, they're moving, and because they're moving, they are now able to move around, and if you have now a certain substance of a high concentration in one place, then this substance is going to move to an area of lower concentration. And this process is called diffusion. And if you want to define diffusion, and I highly recommend that you know the definition, it's the passive movement of particles from an area of higher concentration to an area of lower concentration. This is because of the random movement of particles. You can also say that diffusion occurs down a concentration gradient, So it's from an area of high concentration to an area of low concentration. It is a passive process, and this means that it does not require any additional energy. No additional energy is required. Of course, there must be temperature present, but this is always present anyway. Okay, so that is basically the important thing here. Examples of diffusion, of course, for example, when in the lungs, when carbon dioxide diffuses from the capillaries into the alveoli, into the air, and when oxygen diffuses from the alveoli into the blood. Okay, so this happens because of the concentration gradients of carbon dioxide and oxygen. Okay, so for example, if there is a lower concentration of oxygen inside a cell, then the oxygen is going to move into the cell through the cell membrane, yeah, because of diffusion. So you don't need energy, but you do need a concentration gradient, otherwise it's not going to happen. So there are different types of diffusion, simple and facilitated diffusion, that's the box on the right side. And you have to understand that a biological membrane, like the plasma membrane, is partially permeable. You can also say semi-permeable, or you can also say selectively permeable. They basically mean all the same thing, okay? And this means that a membrane only allows certain substances to go through. And substances that are able to go through directly through the phospholipid bilayer, basically substances that kind of squeeze between the phospholipids. If this happens, then we refer to this as simple diffusion. And for example, water does that. Water is able to diffuse through the phospholipid bilayer. Now, some people are a little bit confused because they say, well, is this not the central part of the lipid bilayer? Is it not hydrophobic? So does water really want to go through? I'm saying, yeah, a little bit. Not, it doesn't want to go through a lot, but it allows it to go through a little bit. Okay, but there are certain substances that don't diffuse through the membrane at all, like, for example, certain ions, because they are too polar. Okay, to do that. So simple diffusion is when the substances diffuse, go from an area of high concentration low to an area of lower concentration, but between the phospholipids. And now there is something called facilitated diffusion, that is the second one. And in facilitated diffusion, the substances go from one side of the membrane to the other side through a so-called channel protein, Okay, and this is called facilitated diffusion. So for facilitated diffusion, you of course need a concentration gradient. Of course, you have a membrane and you need a channel protein. And there are different channel proteins that allow different substances to go through. So for example, chloride channels only allow chloride ions to go through. Okay, so there are different, yeah, and if a membrane has certain channel proteins, then it will basically allow only certain substances to go through and not others. Okay, so the next box, the middle box, is a box without a title, but there are three diagrams here. It tries to now explain a little bit the different types of diffusion. In the first case, you have the big black dots, these are the substances, and they're not able to go through the membrane. So for that substance, the membrane is not permeable. Okay, it could be, for example, that these are sodium ions, let's say, okay, Na+, very polar, very charged, does not want to go through the phospholipid bilayer, Okay. The middle example is where the solute is the substance being dissolved. The solute is able to go through, and it moves from an area of higher concentration to an area of lower concentration. Well, in this case, we have a membrane in between here. Now, if you look at the arrows, you're going to see that there are also some arrows pointing backwards. Okay, and of course, some of the molecules are also going into the area of higher concentration, but the net movement, the overall movement, is towards the area of lower concentration. So you can see that there are many more arrows going to the right, okay, to the part of lower concentration than to the left, where there's a higher concentration. And the last picture shows facilitated diffusion. And here we now have a membrane with channel proteins. And these channel proteins now are like gates, like openings in the membrane that allow the substances to diffuse through. So for example, in the very first one, where it was not able to go through because we didn't have any of these channel proteins. Now we have these channel proteins, and now the substances are able to go through. Okay? So far it's all diffusion, okay? No energy required. The only thing that you need is a concentration gradient. A passive process so far, and we continue passive, okay? Last box, structure and function of potassium channels in axons. And an axon, that is a part of a nerve cell, of a neuron. And when you have an action potential, it means a nerve impulse, then ions, the sodium and the potassium ions, are able to go from one side to the other side. And here we now look at the potassium channels, and this is an example of a channel protein that can open and close. Okay, so these channel proteins, for facilitated diffusion, they're not always open. Sometimes they can close as well. I mean, there are certain some that are always open, but in this case they can open and close. And how does it open and close? By having because of a change of membrane potential. And what I'm going to do is I'm just going to explain you the pictures right now. So in number one, we have the channel which is closed. To move the book a little bit here. In the first picture, channel closed. And you can see that on one side of the membrane, on the outside, the membrane is positively charged. So you see at the top all the pluses. Okay, and in the bottom of the membrane, there are the minuses. It's negative charge. Okay, and you see that the channel protein is closed. And then the polarity of the membrane reverses because of ions being moved around, okay, and diffusing around. And when the outside becomes negative and the inside of the axon becomes positive, so when the polarity of the membrane reverses, then it will open up, and then the K+ ions, that's the potassium, they are able to diffuse out by facilitated diffusion. Okay, so they move from an area of high concentration to an area of low concentration. Okay, but then we have to quickly stop the process again. And how does this work? Is because there is this little ball attached to the channel protein, and this ball will now block the opening and will prevent further potassium ions, K+ ions, to go to the other side. Okay, and it mentions over here hydrophobic core of the membrane and hydrophilic outer parts of the membrane. Of course, we already know that. I don't know why they're actually telling me that. That's always the case. Huh? So I don't know why they're labeling this. The real idea here is actually that you have the ball kind of blocking the gate. Yeah, and then the polarity of the membrane has to be restored back to its original, and then we're back at number one. But what is the idea here? The idea here is that you have facilitated diffusion. However, that you are able to control when this facilitated diffusion can take place by having the channel protein open and close. Okay, so that is an example of controlling the whole process. Let's move on to page 11, and we talk about osmosis. Okay, top box, water movement by osmosis. And there is, in the middle of here, there's also a definition of osmosis. And osmosis is the passive movement of water. Well, it is diffusion, right? It is the diffusion of water from a region of lower solute concentration to a region of higher solute concentration across a partially permeable membrane. There might be a few things which are a little confusing here. And when students usually hear this the first time, they're kind of wondering, I mean, aren't we moving always from an area of higher to lower concentration? And now we're moving from an area of lower to higher. So what is going on here? Okay, well, you have to understand it is the movement of water and not of solutes. Okay, it's the movement of water and not of the salt. Okay, the salt might want to go from an area of higher to lower salt concentration. by diffusion, all right? But the water goes the opposite way, okay? The water wants to go there where there is a lot of salt, okay? So it will go to a region of higher solute salt concentration, okay? That's the one thing. So do we need concentration gradients? Yeah, sure, we do, right? We do need concentration gradients. And the second thing is we need a partially permeable membrane or a semi-permeable membrane, okay? So we have over here on the right side an example of a cell. It's a little circle. And what we have is that this cell is now in a region of low solute concentration. That's in this case pure water. And on the inside you have these little stars, these little black stars. And these are the solute molecules, for example, salt or sugar or whatever. Okay, and you can see that on the inside there is a high solute concentration. And now the water from the outside wants to move inwards, and you can see that there are three arrows. Two of them are pointing inwards and one is pointing outwards. So you see that there's a net inflow of water into the cell. What's going to happen to the cell? Well, if it's a plant cell, you've got a strong cell wall on the outside, which kind of prevents it from bursting. But if it's an animal cell, maybe it's going to burst. Okay, this is the reason why it's not good to drink distilled water. Distilled water does not contain any solutes, because it's not good for the cells, because they end up popping. Okay, so that is the idea. Something which is not explained over here is, but what happens if we put the cell into a region of a very high, very, very high solute concentration, not into pure water, but into a very high solute concentration? Well, then the water is going to move out of the cell and the cell is going to dry up. Okay. But that is osmosis. So osmosis is the diffusion of water. It's the passive movement of water. It's diffusion, right? From an area of low solute concentration to an area of high solute concentration across a semi-permeable membrane. Because the solute, that's something I did not explain yet, the solute molecules, they cannot move to the other side because the membrane prevents them from moving. Okay, the membrane is semi-permeable because it allows the passing of water. But it does not allow the passing of the solute molecules, okay? So that is that's the key idea, which I could have explained actually earlier. The membrane only allows the diffusion of water, but not of the solute molecules. So we move on page 11 to the next box, estimating osmolarity. That's one of those prescribed practicals. And there are three terms that you have to know: hypotonic, hypertonic, and isotonic. Isotonic is explained in another box. Okay, now on the very bottom right there, it's isotonic saline. But I'm going to simply explain these terms right now at the same time. Okay, so what does it mean? When you put a cell into a solution which does not contain a lot of salt, okay, which is pure water, then this water is called hypotonic. Hypotonic means it contains less solute, less salt, less sugar, less dissolved substances than the cell, okay? And if the solution is hypertonic, then it contains more salt, more solute than the cell, okay? And if it is isotonic, then the concentration of the cell and the surrounding solute or solvent are the same. Okay, so isotonic means it's the same concentration. Hypotonic means that the surrounding water contains less salt, and hypertonic, it contains more salt. Okay, and what the experiment does is the following: you take potato cubes, and you put these potato cubes into different concentrated salt or sugar solutions. Okay, and then you wait for a time, and you weigh them before and you weigh them afterwards. And when the water has moved into the potato, then of course the mass of the potato goes up, and then you have a positive percentage. And if the water moves out of the potato, then the potato becomes lighter and has lost mass. And you do so, basically you leave it in there maybe for an hour or so, then you weigh them again, and then you're going to see that there's going to be, for some of these potatoes, there's going to be a gain in the mass, and for others there's going to be a loss in mass. Okay, so you put, for example, a few potatoes into pure water, and then you would probably expect them to gain, okay, a mass, because the water is hypotonic and water is going to move into the potato. And if the water contains a lot of salt, is a concentrated salt solution, then this water is hypertonic, and then the potato is going to lose water, and it's going to become lighter. Let's have a look at the diagram on page 11 called sample osmolarity results. And what you see over here is that you see I have to first define the x and the y axis. So the x axis is sodium chloride, that's salt. Salt concentration in moles per liter. So in moles per liter, it's the molarity. And it goes from 0 all the way to 0.8. And you can see that on the y-axis, you have a percentage mass change. And you can see that let's look at the sweet potato, okay, the solid line. Everything which has a concentration of less than 0.35 moles per liter is on the positive mass change. So this means that the water moved into the potato, so the water was hypotonic. Okay, and water moved into the potato masses increased. And everything which was higher than at a concentration of more than about 0.35, you can see that the sweet potato had a mass change which was negative. So it lost mass, and so because the surrounding medium was hypertonic. And exactly at the point where the line crosses the x-axis, this is the place where the solution is isotonic, so where you have the same concentration, okay? So this allows you actually to determine the isotonic point or isotonic concentration by making a line like this. And you just look at the place where the line crosses the x-axis, and that's the point, okay? Maybe you didn't even measure this point. Maybe this point is between two other measurements, but that's okay. Okay, you can simply find the point where it crosses the line. It's just one side information. I mean, I would have taken points off if you're making a drawing like this, because one of the basic rules is you draw a line of best fit and you do not connect the dots. Okay, this is not a line of best fit that they have drawn. They've simply connected dots, and this just shows that the person who's made the diagram in the book was not aware of measurement error, and therefore minus. Okay, you get minus points. You get points taken off. So don't do that, what the person did here in the book. Don't connect the dots, but try to draw a smooth line using a ruler maybe through the points, okay? To kind of average, you average this away. So next one, accuracy in osmosis experiments is the next one. And they basically tell you, you got to be careful that you have to measure the volume very accurately and precisely. Because you want to, and you also have to measure the mass of the potato very accurately and precisely. I mean, a whole bunch of other things that you have to take into consideration. Of course, you have to maybe make sure that you stir the potatoes with liquid properly, because otherwise you end up building concentration gradients again inside, or you decrease the concentration gradients, because the water which was pulled out of the potato has to be mixed away. There are a whole bunch of detailed issues that we don't have to worry about now. Okay, but the idea is because the mass change is so small, okay, you got to be really precise here. Okay. By the way, why do we actually calculate a percent mass change? Why can we? Why percent? The reason is because the potato cubes that you're using are not always going to be exactly the same. You probably want to have them the same, and you also want that they have the same surface area to volume ratio approximately. But it is like this, that you will probably never get it exactly the same. And in order to compare the results better, you need to convert this into percentage, okay? Percentages. So next one over here, avoiding osmosis in donor organs. So in other words, we have the following situation. You need a donor organ and a kidney, for example, and this kidney has to be transported over a long distance. Of course, the kidney might dry out in the process. Well, so what do you do? No, you put it into water. Not a good idea. The water is hypotonic. Water is going to move into the kidney and the cells are going to die. Okay? Obviously, you're not allowed to put it into hypertonic solution either, into salt solution, then it's going to lose water and the cells are going to die. So what do you have to do? To keep it from drying out, you have to make sure that you keep the kidney or whatever donor organ you are talking about, you have to put it into so-called isotonic saline, and saline is salt water. And if I remember correctly, I think at the university we learned it's 0.8% mass percent salt, okay? That is approximately isotonic, and the 0.8% mass percent of salt solution will prevent osmosis from happening, but the kidney or the donor organ is still kept sufficiently wet and is kept from drying out, okay? We flip the page and we are on page, what about page 12, okay? Active transport, okay? Again, a membrane protein, and here so far we talked about passive transport, and in active transport we have protein pumps, and pumps require energy in the form of ATP. And here we can now move substances from an area of low concentration to an area of high concentration. So basically we're building up more substances in, let's say, inside the cell. This requires energy, of course, okay? And you see over here a diagram, and this little ball, dark gray ball that you have over here, I have no idea why the arrow of this ball is pointing towards the right. Actually, it should go into the protein pump, okay? It goes basically into the pump, and then the second picture is now it's associated with the pump, and then you can see in number 3, energy is used, and then the pump kind of flips over and opens on the other side of the membrane, and the substance can go out. Okay, that's number 4. The particle is released on the side with a higher concentration, and then the pump flips back and can keep on doing that. And you always need energy, okay? It's a little bit if you're trying to press something into into a box, okay? Then you need energy for that, right? Because it doesn't want to go in, yeah, because you already have a high concentration of things in the box, of your things. And if you want to add even more, then you have to press it together, and this requires energy, okay? So that is used, these are the protein pumps, they only work in a specific direction, the substance can only be entered the pump on one side and can only exit it on the other side. Yeah, and it kind of flips over like this, yeah? But I don't understand, I really have to admit, on the first picture up here on page 12, on top, I don't understand why the ball, the substance being pumped, why the arrow is pointing to the right. It should be actually pointing into the pump, because the substance goes into the pump, okay? Structure and function of sodium potassium pumps in axons. Okay, so that's the second box here. And you again have a drawing over here. And this sodium potassium pump is so-called an antiporter. An antiporter means that it is able to pump sodium and potassium at the same time into opposite directions. Okay, not surprisingly, it is an ATPase. What does this mean? ATPase means that it uses ATP as an energy source, and it splits the ATP into ADP and P, and a phosphate. And this releases energy, and this energy is used to pump sodium into one direction and potassium into the other direction. And the picture actually shows you that on the outside of the cell you have 2 potassium entering, and when they enter the pump, and the 3 sodiums are leaving. Okay, so that's basically once the pump is able to also has these is able to flip over, has these 2 states. In the first state, it's like this, that the potassium goes into the pump and the sodium goes out on the one side, and then it flips over, and on the other side the potassium goes out on the other side, and the sodium goes in. Okay, and so that you see that on the inside the sodium is caught and is released to the outside, and the potassium, it's the opposite direction, where you catch the potassium on the outside and you pump it to the inside. Okay, so that is kind of an example of a pump protein, a real one. So to summarize this, what should you know? Active transport requires energy. It does not, of course, require a concentration gradient. Does not require concentration gradient. If there is one there, well, then so be it. But that's not the point. And it does not require concentration gradient because ATP as an energy source is needed. Okay. And then we have this sodium potassium pump as an example of a pump which is even able to pump 2 substances into opposite directions at the same time. Okay. So we now move on down transport using vesicles. I mean, so far we've looked at how a cell membrane, how substances can be moved from one side of the cell membrane to the other side of the cell membrane, either by simple diffusion directly through the membrane, or by facilitated diffusion through a channel protein, or by active transport. However, membranes are very flexible structures, and there is also a way to pump substances out, but to move substances out of a cell using vesicles. Okay. And that is now something that I'm going to explain over here. Okay, so, and there are two terms that you have to know: endocytosis, which is explained on the left side of the picture, and exocytosis, which is explained on the right side of the picture. And endocytosis is the uptake of substances into a cell, and this is done by membranes folding around the substance to be taken up and then closing on the other side, and then you have a vesicle or a vacuole. Okay. Usually we call this a vacuole, like a food vacuole, okay? And in exocytosis, there are, let's say, enzymes or hormones made inside the cell, which are then released to the outside. And these substances are transported by vesicles to the plasma membrane, okay? And I'm going to do now the following. I'm going to step you through the process of exocytosis. It could also be that they might be telling you the term secretion. Secretion, okay? So if a cell, a gland cell, secretes a substance, how does this work? Well, it works by exocytosis. So number one over here, it says your proteins are synthesized by the ribosomes. Well, of course, because this is what ribosomes do. And these ribosomes can be found on the rough endoplasmic reticulum. Okay, just as a side note, the free ribosomes that float around in the cytoplasm, these free ribosomes produce proteins that stay in the cell. Okay, but when you have the ribosomes on the RER, on the rough endoplasmic reticulum, these proteins that are made that way will end up outside of the cell. The question is, how do we get outside? And that's what I'm explaining right now. Okay, so we are making now the proteins on the RER, and the finished proteins can then be found inside the RER. Okay, and then what happens is, number two, vesicles bud off from the RER. And these vesicles contain the proteins which were made. So you have to imagine that the RER forms a little vesicle, the membrane folds outwards to form a vesicle, and this vesicle pinches off and now floats around the cytoplasm and to the Golgi body. Now, side information again, it doesn't just float around. There are, of course, microtubules, and there are protein fibers inside the cell that kind of pull it, okay? The vesicles are actually pulled along inside the cell. You don't have to know that, okay? But at the Golgi apparatus, which is also made of a membrane, the membrane of the vesicle and the membrane of the Golgi apparatus, they fuse together, and the protein which was in the vesicle is then in the Golgi. And inside the Golgi, a whole bunch of chemical reactions take place which modify the protein and package the protein. Okay, and on the other side of the Golgi, a new vesicle starts to form, and a new vesicle starts to bud off, and these vesicles are then pulled to the plasma membrane, and they now contain the finished protein. And when the vesicle and the plasma membrane fuse together, a little bit like soap bubbles, then the contents of the vesicles are released outside of the cell. Okay. So that is, I would say you should know the sequence of events here, okay? So first we make the protein at the RER, we have a vesicle, the vesicle goes to the Golgi, a new vesicle is formed at the Golgi which goes to the plasma membrane, okay? That is exocytosis, and what happens here is you need membranes, of course, because all the vesicles and the RER, that's all membrane, right? And the membranes are able to break and reform. Because when we pinch off a vesicle, then the membrane has to close off, okay, and has to make a vesicle. And so this is, you can see how flexible the membranes are. And this basically means that the membranes are able to break and reform during this process, okay. And in endocytosis is similar, but it's only the opposite way. The part of the plasma membrane starts to fold inwards, and a droplet with fluid or with food is formed. And then you have another vesicle on the inside. Okay, so that is simply the thing. And sometimes they give you a picture of a cell, and they ask you, what is the cell doing? And if the cell contains a lot of RER and a lot of Golgi and a lot of vesicles, then chances are pretty good that this is a cell from a gland which secretes substances, or which is doing a lot of exocytosis. Because if the cell contains a lot of RER, then it's making many proteins to be secreted. Okay, so I think I'm just going to call it quits right now here again. So this was page 12, and I wish you all the best.